You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great weekend. I watched 2 episodes of a show with my husband on Friday. I know. It was high achievement for me because he will never watch any show with me. The first one we watched was the bonus episode of Lenox Hill. It was about COVID-19. Lenox Hill is that show on Netflix that features 4 doctors in Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. 2 episodes ago, I interviewed Dr. John Buchvar, the neurosurgeon from the hospital. Well, this episode is all about how the hospital has coped during COVID-19. I really think it's a must watch. So I watched that, and then I saw a clip for another show on Netflix, and I need you to watch it because I got fully sucked into it. This is a sports show, but I'm telling you, anybody will want to watch it because it's about these truly, truly unique sports that people play in different parts of the world, and you just become transfixed. So it's a docuseries. It's got 8 episodes, and it really takes you on a journey to see these lesser known sports across the globe. And you're like, of course they're lesser known because who in the world would play this crazy sport? But it is so much a part of this country or the region's pride and history that they've kind of maintained these really outdated sports. So, for example, first episode is Calcio Storico. It's in Florence, Italy. It's MMA meets rugby, the most violent sport I've ever seen in my life. You get recruited to play on a team and you stay on that team for the rest of your life. And if you're from Florence, this is like the biggest thing in the world. So you get recruited to play. You can't ever leave the team. You're not going to be traded out. It's never going to happen for you. Also, you don't get paid. So you train all year long for a sport that you probably will get broken bones from and you will never make a dime. But the people of Florence stand outside every year for this game and they cheer people on and then they pack the Colosseum to watch. And it is rugby on steroids. So there are 54 men, 27 per side. And there's a pitch covered with about 6 inches of sand, and they're all fighting over this ball. So the goal is to put the ball into the opposing team's net. And to clear the way, the slabs up front fight each other. They're punching, they're kicking, they're wrestling, they're twisting arms, they're nut crunching, they're headbutting. Anything goes. There are only a few rules. A missed goal shot results in 0.5 point taken from your team. So think about a soccer game and every time they try to score a goal, imagine if every time you missed a goal, you get 0.5 point taken away from your team, which is total mind screw. And then if you have somebody on your team that's like sufficiently beaten up, they must stay down until a goal is scored. So you have somebody on your team who's like, I can't move my legs. They have to stay on the ground until someone scores a goal. So I can't even do it justice. It's crazy. So the strategy really is beat up the other team so you can make your way through the melee and dunk it. So you've got to check that out. Oh, also, they go out for drinks after and they're all like bleeding. They have broken bones and they'll just sit and drink for a couple of hours and then they'll go to the emergency room. And one bystander was like, this sport's so great. One year we had a guy that left the stadium holding his eyeball. It's like, what? They have this other game called Highland Games. It's probably very familiar to those of you who are in Europe. I think it's crazy town. So it originated from Ireland in 2000 BC, and then it crossed over to Scotland with the 4th and 5th century migrations. So the Braemar Gathering is held in September. It's the biggest and most prestigious Highland Games event and enjoys the annual attendance of the royal family. So it's this beautiful grass with these really old sports, and then the Queen's car pulls up, she gets out, and she sits in a shed and watches the whole day. And so it's like men in kilts, and they will pick up like a huge telephone pole, lift it up, walk with it, and then throw it. And then you win based on how far you can throw it. And then they have these all these other sports where you'll have like this old time weight, which is tied to rope. And then they'll pick it up and kind of lasso it around their head and then throw the weight. And the whole time you're watching it, you're like, there's no doubt someone is going to like slip up and that weight's going to go flying in the crowd and like someone's going to lose body parts. Or God forbid, somebody hits the queen. But everyone's totally into it because it's a celebration of Scottish identity and cultural pride, which have endured through centuries of political turmoil and upheaval. So of course you're like, okay, I get it. Like it's this really important cultural tradition. And because of it, like the first sport, Calcio Storico, you're like, all right, I'm in. Like I want to go there. I want to see it. I want to go to Florence, Italy. And my husband turned to me. He's like, let's go to Scotland sometime. Like, really? Like, that's where we're going to go. We want to watch these games, but you're totally into it. Now, the last one, I mean, there are 8 episodes, but this other one I watched, I don't think I want to go watch it, but I have to tell you, you are transfixed watching the whole episode. So this one is called Kokburu, and this is in Kyrgyzstan, which I knew very little about. I mean, I knew very limited based on my degree in political science and studying that region. But you find yourself Googling all of these places as you watch the episode. And this one was no different. So it is this landlocked country and it's like surrounded by mountains. It's incredibly beautiful, but they have the most bizarre sport in the world. It's sort of like polo, but instead of a ball, they use a goat carcass. I'm not even kidding you. So it is 2 teams on a horseback and the players try to maneuver with the goat's carcass and score by putting it into the opponent's goal. So it's an equestrian game. And what you learn is that the men in Kyrgyzstan basically start riding horses when they're like 4 years old. It's a total way of life. You're not going to see one woman in this whole episode. All the women stay home. Only the men go and watch this event too. All of the reporters are men. And it's interesting because it's where like Asia and Russia sort of cross over. So it's interesting to see like how people look and their bodies. I mean, they look like they could win any Olympic sport. Like they're in these great shape. And the sport makes absolutely zero sense. And you're like, it's 2020. Why are you using a goat's carcass? So I recommend you watch it. It is totally bonkers. But again, you're going to be Googling the whole time. I'm hoping that you're watching Athlete A. It just premiered this week on Netflix. I'm hoping to interview the directors of it. You've probably heard about the sexual abuse scandal involving USA Gymnastics and team doctor Larry Nassar. And this documentary is done by Bonnie Cohen and John Shank. And it's how the great thing is that they carefully lay out the events as they transpired, showing the broader historical context that set up the rotten system and how it led to someone like Larry Nassar being able to molest countless young girls for decades. I recommend it, and also watching, there are a couple other great documentaries on the gymnastics scandal. One of them is Heart of Gold, which was on HBO. And then at someone else's suggestion, I also watched a CNN documentary from like 2009 called Achieving the Perfect 10, which goes behind the scenes of the Parkettes Gym in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which I was very familiar with because I grew up outside of Philadelphia. And I grew up watching gymnastics. My sister and I did not have gymnastics bodies. Gymnasts, as we were told quite often, really excel if they're under 5'1", and of great strength, and I could barely do the hang. What is that thing called? We used to do in the presidential fitness classes and gym. It's like the overhead hang. You had to like put your chin over the bar and hold it as long as you could. My sister and I like sucked at that. And then the girls that just kicked ass were always the gymnasts. They were the short powerhouses. Anyway, we used to watch the Olympics every year, and we were totally into all of the names of the athletes. Of course, I'm a nerd and remembered them all. So when you're watching this, if you're like me and you really watch gymnastics for a long time, you are going to recognize some of the judge or some of the coaches who were participating in the Crowley camp. And I started, I was DMing with Teddy from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills because she was really into gymnastics too when we were talking about it. And she was asking me about one of the girls that was on the team. And now then she was a coach at Crowley's gym. And now I'm dying to know how much she knew. Anyways, it's a whole scandal. I want you to watch it. It's called Athlete A. That's your homework. This episode I'm really excited about because I got to talk to Garcelle Bouvet from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She is new to the show this season. So fun to talk to. She's got a new podcast too, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. So here we go. I'm thrilled to tell you I've got Garcelle Bouvet on my show today. She's a little bit of everything. I mean, the list is pretty long. So it's like author, host, actress, TV star, philanthropist, mom. What's going on? What else do you want to add to this?
I don't sleep.
Boat captain? I mean, why not throw in a couple other
things? Caterer.
Well, isn't that the truth? Caterer, yeah.
Oh, with the kids? I feel like a short order cook. Well, hello. Thank you for having me on your show, by the way.
I am so excited to have you. And I feel like we're kindred spirits because you watch a lot of TV and you love pop culture. And so we will get into all of those shows. But first, I want to ask you a little bit about your career. Now, this is what I found so interesting. So you're born in Haiti, mm-hmm. moved to the United States when you're 7 years old. You're the youngest of seven children.
Yep.
You land in Peabody, Massachusetts. I had a friend from college from Peabody. I mean, how in the world did you end up there? But then when you're 16, you move to Miami to become a model.
We moved to Miami because my mom was sick of the cold weather in Massachusetts.
Okay, good. Because I thought, how in the world do you go from Peabody, Massachusetts to Miami?
Yeah. She was sick of the weather and she wanted to be closer to Haiti. Course, Miami, which is where I was born. So that was the transition. And then a friend of mine was like, I'm going to be an extra on a commercial. Do you want to be an extra? And I'm like, what's an extra? And it was an orange juice commercial that was shooting for 2 days. So at the end of the second day, I got the nerve to ask one of the leads, which was this beautiful black girl, I want to do what you're doing. And honey, she was not having any part of me. She was like, you're on your own, girl. And then I found out what agency she was with. And it was an agency called Irene Marie in Fort Lauderdale. I borrowed my mom's car one day, no appointment, didn't know how it works, no photos, just was driving there to see if they would at least tell me how do I do it? How do I get into modeling? And because people had told my mom that I should. And again, we didn't know anything about it. So I'm driving to Fort Lauderdale. I stop at a stoplight. I lean out the window to look at my makeup. And I decided that I needed lip gloss. So I'm looking for my lip gloss in my bag. And all of a sudden, this hand comes in the car and scares the shit out of me. And it was the woman in the stoplight behind me in her car.
Wow.
She gave me her card. She said, you should be a model. It was not only the agency I was going to, it was the owner of the agency herself.
Well, that's like, I mean, that's a moment where you're like, that was meant to be.
Exactly. You can't script that. And then 6 months later, Irene Marie from Ford Modeling Agency, you know, scouts the country to find new talent and went to Irene Marie and I was invited to meet her. And she's like, come to New York. You only need a toothbrush. And I was like, I think that, but okay.
Was your mom at all paranoid about you going off and having these jobs? Because I feel like we hear so much about that industry.
You know what's interesting? My parents were so strict that for me to even be allowed to go to New York was just like, what is happening? Like by myself, 17 years old, didn't have any family in New York that I could hang out with. She just wanted to give me the opportunity, you know? And I think in a way she was kind of living through me. This is probably what she wanted to do. And in Haiti, that never happened. So we all took a chance.
It's just really incredible. And you became so successful at a young age. How do you think working that young and sort of being in a position where you've got to really be a hustler and independent, and what do you think are the life lessons that you learned that have kind of helped propel you in other parts of your life?
I think one of them is just being brave enough to go to New York. I mean, I was scared. There were times that I was lonely. There were times that I felt like, is this the right thing to do? But I was also excited by the possibilities. And I think because my parents, well, my mom, really, she raised me. My dad came in and out of my life. I feel like the structure that was instilled in me really saved me from going on the wild side and doing crazy things, because I was so scared that my mom would kill me. That kept me on the straight and narrow for the most part. And, you know, in the agency also, when you're that young, they're really involved a lot.
Well, that's good. And do you also feel like you could talk to anybody, because you're in these positions where you're young, you have to go in, you have to meet the person who runs the label or the publicist. You're really in a position where you have to speak up and be curious, don't you think?
1,000%. I think that's what really helped me to grow. Because just think about it. At 17, 18 years old, I'm traveling all over the world. I'm flying, first of all, by myself, landing, and somebody has my name on a card, and I'm totally trusting of that person getting in a car with them and taking me to wherever, whatever hotel, whatever shoot. And now, you know, that I'm a grown-up, I go, oh my God, like that was so scary. That was such a, anything could have happened.
Do you see your children at all getting into the business as well?
No, they could care less.
Really? They're just like,
they could care less. I tried when they were little. People were like, oh, they should be models. And I was like, guys, let's give it a try. And they were like, they hated it. They wouldn't want to go. Yeah. I'd have to force them or bribe them. And I'm like, it's too hard.
Yeah. Okay. So once you kind of pivot out of modeling, not totally pivot out, but then you started working as an actress and really got a big break. Tell us about Models Inc. That was a That was a big break.
That's a big break because, you know, Aaron Spelling, I mean, that's a name in the industry that's huge. And I swear to God, I don't know where I get my balls from, but my agent at the time, I was still modeling, going back and forth, and he was like, hey, there's a series that's coming up. It's about models, and Aaron Spelling's doing it, and, you know, we're going to submit you. And I said, great. So a couple of weeks go by, and I don't hear anything. And I call him and I said, hey, whatever happened to that series? And he's like, well, they're not going black with any of the characters. And I was like, it's a show about models in New York and it's not going to be any black girls. So, yeah. All right. So I go to bed that night and I have a dream. I'm from Haiti. We're not suspicious, but we believe in signs and all that stuff. So I had a dream that I was talking to Aaron Spelling. So the next morning I got up and I thought, why did I dream about Aaron Spelling that I was talking to him in his office? So I find out, you know, no Google, you call, you know, 411. And was it 411 to get information,
It was.
And I got Aaron Spelling's address and it was on Wilshire Boulevard. I'll never forget, 5757 Wilshire Boulevard. And I go, I'm going to go there, right? I did it once, it kind of worked. Let's see again. So I go there and there's a black receptionist. And I said, hi, I'd like to see Mr. Spelling. And she's like, do you have an appointment? And I said, no. And she goes, it doesn't work like that. So by now though, I have a tape, I have pictures. And I said, well, will you give him this? I really want to be on the show. And she said, well, I'll give him the package for you. And I said, okay. So the next day I called her and I said, hey, did you give him the package? And she remembered me. And she was like, I did. 3 days later, I get a call from the casting director. I read for her. A week goes by, they call me in, I read for Aaron Spelling, and I get the role.
Unbelievable. That was a great show, too.
That was, oh my God, so much happened in that one season.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
I do feel like it's one of those shows that people reference a lot, you know?
It's one of those 90s shows, right?
Absolutely. And then you get a job on the Jamie Foxx show.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was really fun. That was like, I had taken improv classes and I'm so happy that I did because working with Jamie Foxx, you know, we would rehearse during the week. And then when they brought the night of the taping, they would bring the audience in. He would get such a high from the audience that he would change the script. So it was almost like it was an improv. You never knew, okay, when's my line coming in? Because he was just, you know, so excited by the audience. He fed off that.
Who have you found have been the most inspiring that you've worked with in acting?
I have to say the very first time I worked with Will Smith, I got to see what a true movie star, TV star was. He came in on set and he knew everybody's name. He shook everybody's hand. He was so gracious with his time. And I saw that and I was like, I want to do that. Because so many times you go on shows and the stars, if you're a guest starring on a show, the stars don't really give you the time of day. They don't care. You know, you're just there for whatever. And he really made you feel like you belong there and he was happy to have you. And I thought that's the way to do it.
Yeah, he does seem like everybody has a nice thing to say about him. And that seems near impossible to do in your industry.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, you were with a bunch of girlfriends in a scene early in the show. And one of them was Will Smith's ex. And you kind of had a laugh about how you had dated. I mean,
we had never really talked about that. It's so funny. Of course, I don't know. I don't know because it's so funny because I never thought, should I bring it up? It's from the past. It wasn't, you know, she wasn't involved. And, you know, so it was funny when that came up. My God. And there was something else that they didn't reveal, but I was happy that she took it so well.
Well, do you think there's a chance that we will see her come on the show? Because that was, I think I tweeted that immediately. Like, where has she been? Like, get her on the show too.
I know. I would love for Cherie to be on the show. She is so dynamic. She's such a great girl. And, you know, Will and Jada and Cherie have such a great relationship.
Yeah.
And I think they were the first real family that you knew of that had the co-parenting down and they all were together. So
yeah,
it's really cool.
I think you're right. And I also think that it's, I think a lot of people knew the story about your divorce and how your ex-husband had an affair. So then they see you on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and he's in these scenes with you and you guys seem to parent really well. I'm sure it's not easy all the time, but I mean, obviously Will and Cherie have kind of shown you that it's possible.
Yeah.
What's your advice for other people on walking through the pain of a divorce and somehow figuring out a way to be great co-parents to your children?
Let me tell you, my divorce was the hardest thing I had ever gone through because I never saw it coming. It wasn't like, oh, I'm suspicious, right? So going through, is that you?
Garza.
Oh, no. My son's FaceTiming me.
Is that your son? You just had a baby?
Yes, Oliver. Can't talk. Sorry. So my biggest motivation was my kids.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with my dad in my life. Mm. And so I didn't want them to have to go through that.
Yeah.
That was really, really, looking back, I missed out on a lot with that, but I feel like that was my motivation. I couldn't hate someone that my kids love so much. And it's not their fault. And I wanted them to still have a good life, a good family foundation. So, you know, therapy, life coaches, reading, crying, going through all of it.
Yeah.
But what I have to say is that both of us had the same goal in mind, and that's to put the kids first. So,
yeah.
And that's what we did.
So how in the world did you end up on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? And am I losing my mind? Did I see you in an episode of the Rachel Zoe Project at Decades?
Long time ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm friends with my friend Christo's own Decades.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, probably because he invites me to everything. How did I get on Housewives? Well, they called my manager. A few years ago, they had sort of circled around and it wasn't the right time. My kids were too little. I didn't feel like it was what I wanted to do at the moment. And then they came back around again. And my manager goes, just so you know, Housewives is interested in you, but we're going to pass. I just want to let you know, because I guess he figured if I hear it from the other girls or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, wait a minute, let me think about it. And I thought, you know what? Is this the right time? I'm single. So that's better. At least I'm not married and going into reality TV, because I think it messes up your marriage in a way.
I agree.
My boys are 12. I feel like they get things more. And then I thought, I'm tired of traveling all over the place for acting jobs. You know, last year, I was away so much, you know, Atlanta, Vancouver, Nashville. So I thought, if I can do a job that's fun and keeps me home with my boys who were 12, and I feel like, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll is about to come upon us with middle school, that it was a good thing.
Had you been watching the show at all?
I had seen the show from time to time. Beverly Hills and Atlanta were the ones that I, you know, would watch every now and then. But so, and plus I knew the girls. Yeah. I knew Denise. I knew Rinna. I didn't know Dorit or Erica. And Kyle, I would see at events. Actually, Kyle, one time, I went to the circus with my boys and they were little. And she was sitting in front of me. And I guess she had tweeted that she was at the circus. And she started getting, you know, mean tweets and PETA. And so she turned around to me and she said, "Don't tweet you're at the circus." And I thought that was really nice. So that was my only interaction with her before the show.
But you're good friends with Allie Larder. Isn't she friends with Kyle?
Allie Landry. Yeah, she is. Yeah.
So did you have any moment of pause because the show did not feature any, really has not featured any diverse cast members?
No, that didn't give me pause, because I thought it's about time.
Yes, it did. Yep.
You know, but did I feel the pressure being the first Black woman on Housewives? Yeah, I definitely felt pressure that people wanted me to come in and do a certain thing or have a chip on my shoulder. And I didn't want to be labeled an angry Black woman because that's not who I am. Yeah. So I just wanted to stay true to who I am. And I think that's what people have been able to see so far.
Some people wondered why they didn't see you the first few episodes. Were you working?
I was juggling three jobs plus doing that. And Housewives was really great about understanding that those commitments I had already had. So,
yeah.
But and I went to Rome.
Oh my gosh. What an experience. So what was that like to transition from an actress into being on a reality show? I know that you love reality shows. I guess the question we would all like to know is, we live vicariously through you. You are our source of information. What is it like to transition into somebody on a reality show? Is it bizarre? Is it what you would think it is? What is it like?
It is really bizarre. And at first I had, like, you know, as an actor, I was, the first time we were shooting and we're shooting at my house, I was sort of waiting for the producers to yell action. They were like, "We don't do that here." So what's weird is, like, when you're an actor, you can hide behind, you know, a character, your character. So it's not really you. People aren't invested in everything you say because they're into the story. So for Housewives, what I'm finding is people are so invested in this show.
Yeah.
And it's your life. You know, it's my kids. It's, you know, having mics in my car. And after they take the mics out of the car, I really don't trust that they didn't leave one.
Yeah.
I'm always like, I don't trust it. So it takes getting used to, because this is your life and people are weighing in on Twitter. The hardest part for me is the Twitter world, because I think people feel like they can say anything they want. You know, and that's, or they're taking sides and building up more of drama than there is.
Yes. Like, people seem to get very hung up on, you know, we're kind of still early into the season about whether or not you and Kyle connected, but in terms of everybody else's life, if you move into a new group of friends, sometimes it takes some time to get to know somebody.
Absolutely. No one comes out of the gate being best friends. And, you know, it's just also navigating the friendships. You know, I'm closer to some, you know, and not closer to others. So it's just real dynamics. You know, the thing that I found the most surprising about the show is that I thought there'd be a little bit of scripted, you know, but it's really the only thing they do is try to get us together. Like, oh, today you're going to have lunch with Rinna and Dorit, that kind of stuff. But then the rest of it is driven by us.
I also think that we individually watch these shows, The Real Housewives, through our own lens. So when you said in the car, you know, it, you know, every time I ask or every time I'm talking to Kyle, the conversation is always about her. I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically, and I related to that because I'm like you. I'm a curious person. I'm someone who asks a lot of questions. And to me, that's a gauge of someone's interest in me or the world around them about how much they ask you in return. It's so it's not a one-sided conversation. I relate to that because I would have the same reaction if I met somebody and I'm getting to know them and I don't feel like they're asking stuff in return, I'm probably going to be a little bit aloof at first.
Right. Exactly. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So I get it.
Yeah.
Once you started filming, did you feel like, I know that you knew Denise already, you knew Serena, some of the other women, did you find there was anyone you were surprised that you had a lot in common with, that you got along really well?
I would say Erica. Erica surprised me in a lot of ways. I mean, watching the show. Yeah. Watching the show, you know, she's this tough exterior. You know, some people call her cold. I think she just has her defenses up, her walls up. But what surprised me with her is that she's so vulnerable now. I felt like when her and I had breakfast that day and she talked about Tom and how he sort of took her and her son in because she was a single mom. And that I could relate to because when you're a single parent, you want whoever to come in your life to embrace your kids as much as they embrace you. So I connected with that. And the fact that she got so emotional, I was like, wow, that's really cool to see. So I really enjoyed that.
You know, I think part of that was that, and that's why I think the show is great because it shows women, mature women who have lived complicated lives, are complicated people and multi-layered. And what I saw in that moment was two adult women who have lived very full lives who saw each other in that moment and related on in so many personal ways. I had never seen her as a viewer connect with somebody as much as I think, and I felt like it was immediate.
Definitely immediate, real connection, you know, like woman to woman. It was really, it was really, really nice.
And I also think that she appreciated the way that you honored and respected her marriage.
I mean, they've been together over 20 years. I mean, that's amazing, especially in Hollywood, you know? That's amazing.
And also, I think you two have grown sons. So that makes you connect probably in a way that you wouldn't necessarily connect with someone who has little toddlers, maybe.
So
what has been the most surprising thing that's come out of the show?
I would have to say I can't say until I get to the reunion, but probably really how social media takes over. I mean, Lisa Rinna had told me, she goes, it's one thing to shoot the show. It's another thing to watch the show because then you get to see what the women have been saying behind your back because we only get the episodes 2 days before you guys see it. And then she goes, and then the world weighs in. So there's like so many different layers to being on the show, which I'm finding to be really interesting.
Like, for example, the scene with Denise's daughters, they're in the background when you're having a conversation about threesomes. Do you feel like it has exploded way beyond what it felt like when you were filming or immediately after?
Absolutely. First of all, the kids weren't that close. It just looked like they were super close to us. And I'm surprised that the women felt like she was being a hypocrite because naturally she's, you know, free with her sexuality and she was married to Charlie Sheen. We all get that life, right? But at the same time, you don't have the same conversations you have when your kids are around, when you're talking to your girlfriend. I mean, to me, that's just like so clear that I didn't know why everybody was making such a big deal about it.
So what are we to look forward to the rest of the season? Before I ask you about your love of other reality shows.
Oh, okay.
What do we have to look forward to?
Well, we have Randy's coming in. Kim is coming in.
What did you think of them? You didn't know them beforehand?
I didn't know them before at all. I think Brandy, I may have seen her at a party. Brandy's Brandy. She comes in before her, you know, before her reputation even walks in the room. You know, she's there. Kim, I thought she was sweet. towards the end of the last party, the very last show, her dress kept on falling apart, falling down. We kept on saying, "We see your nipple, Kim. We see your nipple." It was ridiculous. So you see us going to Rome. You see the whole Brandy, Denise, all that. Denise and Rinna, it gets really tense. It gets really, really hard.
Are you going to keep in touch with all of these women between seasons?
Denise, yes. Yeah. Erica and I text, like I checked on her a couple of weeks ago. I mean, we text here and there, but we're not having lunch or anything like that.
Can we get some of your friends on the show?
I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love that.
I think we would like to see a little bit more diversity too. So yeah. We're hoping. Okay, cool.
Yeah, let's see.
All right. So other shows that you watch, 90 Day Fiance, have you been watching? Have you been watching from the beginning?
No, not from the beginning. I think it's been maybe 2 seasons now.
Garcelle, you need to go back and watch season 2. Season 2 is the greatest season of all 90 Day Fiance.
Who's on season 2? Because I may know.
Okay. All you need to know is this. One of the couples is Yamir and Chelsea. Chelsea's from Indiana and she's pretty much a hippie. She goes to Nicaragua as like on some mission trip and she meets Yamir, who's in a boy band in Nicaragua.
What?
So the boy band manager says to Chelsea, "You can't take him back to America. What's going to happen in the band?" She's the Yoko Ono of this Nicaraguan band. And then he goes back to Indiana and he's trying to get a record deal and they send him to a record producer in Chicago. I mean, really?
Okay. Maybe Nashville, but
and he's in the Latin market. Why would you go to Chicago? I mean, it's just a series of things that are hilarious, but it's way before people got famous from the show.
Okay. Oh, I have to catch up.
So it's just more authentic. Like you feel like, okay, this is perhaps a true love story and they have all these circumstances around them and can they like move through it? And there's another couple where, she's from Africa and he's an American from like Pennsylvania. His family is really narrow-minded, shall we say.
Okay. Okay.
And her name's Amy and they're deeply in love and they're very young.
She's from Africa and her name is Amy.
I know. I know. I think she's South African.
Okay.
So they meet, they fall in love and they've got 90 days from the time that she goes to visit him in Pennsylvania to get married. Yeah. And it actually, people need to go back and watch it because it really was, you see the journey of this very white family, except this girl from South Africa.
Oh my God.
And it's so, gosh, it's so timely now that I think about it. But anyway, that's season 2. Go back.
Okay. I'll go back. But I'm obsessed with Ed. I'm obsessed with Darcy.
Oh yeah. Can you play her in some sort of made for TV movie spinoff adjacent?
First of all, I would have to plump my lips up so much.
I know.
But I can't believe people do that. They'll go to a foreign country, meet someone, and then in 90 days they want to get married.
And she's interesting. I've met her before and she talks in platitudes. She's the manifestation of TJ Maxx signs. Like everything is like, you know, it is what the world will give us. It's like, you can't have a normal.
Right. No, you can't. You can't.
Blessings are abound. You know, it's so, she lives in a parallel universe, but she's nice.
That is so funny.
She
seems nice. I just want to find love already.
Okay. Yeah. What else are you watching?
Love is Blind. Did you watch Love
so
is Blind?
So good. Yes.
So good.
So good.
So good. I just had Lauren and Cameron on my podcast and they couldn't be any cuter. I can't believe some of these couples are together.
I know. I interviewed the producer of it and I thought he had just like a really interesting take on the show. And I think we needed in these times, it was like the perfect show at the perfect time. I think that Lauren and Cameron should have children immediately.
I do too.
So in love. It's just,
I hope
I hope that they're forever together. Okay. Are you into documentaries, docuseries?
What did I just watch recently? I started the Epstein documentary, but it didn't.
Yeah, it's depressing.
It was too hard to watch. Yeah, exactly that. It was depressing.
Yeah. And what do your kids like to watch?
My kids don't really watch a lot of TV, not because they're into Brawlhalla, Minecraft.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, my son too.
Yeah. What's the other one? There's that. What's that other one that's really big? The fighting one. I can't even remember, but yeah, they're into video games. So I have to force them to spend time with me. I heard on your podcast, you were saying that your kids want to spend the evening with you. I have to force them. I'm like, come on, let's watch a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, how long is the movie? I'm like, really?
You have to like duct tape them to the couch.
Oh my God, right?
What are you going to do when they have girlfriends? Are you going to give them a hard time?
No, absolutely. I don't want it to happen. They look so much more grown up than they are. That, you know, before quarantine, we'd go out and I'd see like, you know, 14, 15 year old girls checking them out. And I'm like giving them daggers.
Right.
Like, stay away, stay away.
And how,
I don't know.
And how's the new baby? The
grandma? Oh my God. He's so cute. He's so cute. They don't live here in LA, so I don't get to see them much. We FaceTime all the time.
Yeah.
I want him to know my voice. We broke quarantine for Mother's Day and they came down.
Oh,
and that
good.
Was really nice. Yeah.
Have you come up with your grandma name?
Believe it or not, you're going to be shocked. I just love grandma.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah.
I do. I feel like it's a badge of honor. I don't want Gigi or TT or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless he decides to call me something, but I like grandma.
It's just weird that you're a grandma because you look so young. You look really, really young. You're looking good.
Black don't crack. Have you heard?
I know. I crack a lot because I'm very pale.
Where are you from?
Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But now I live in Orange County.
Oh, nice.
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know. You guys should be wearing masks over there.
You know what?
What?
I feel like everybody does. I feel like they cover like the nut bags.
Gotcha.
It's not really a reflection of the people that I see. People wear masks everywhere here. I
have a couple of friends in Orange County. I have a girlfriend who's a volleyball player. And then Heather Dubrow lives in Orange County.
Heather and I have several friends in common because like an overlap in kids' ages, but we live in the same town. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us what you're working on now, because there are about 17 things and where they can listen to your show and follow you, because now they've fallen in love with you if they have not already.
Oh, you're so sweet. Going to Bed with Garcelle is my project. It's my passion project. And, it's a podcast. You can hear it anywhere you listen to podcasts. And we just made the top charts this week. So I'm really excited. That and, you know, follow me on Instagram at Garcelle and Twitter at Garcelle B.
That's such a pretty name, by the way.
Thank you. I had nothing to do with it.
I feel like there'll be lots of Garcelles after this show. Don't you think?
Oh, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Like, don't you
think? That would be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. There'll be a lot more Garcelles. Nice. Yeah. Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you.
You too. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. I'll send you my list of shows to watch.
Yes, please do. Please.
I will.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.
Bye, Kate.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guest, Garcelle, and remind you guys to subscribe to the show on iTunes. Please do me a great favor today. If you have about 10 seconds free, can you just leave me a 5-star review on iTunes? Those reviews are so, so helpful, and I'm almost to 4,000. It would be an early Christmas present to me. Also, you can check my Facebook group out. It's Reality Life with Kate Casey, and you can jump in and talk about other shows that you're watching and meet some great people who are super observant and have great recommendations for books and podcasts and shows to watch. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. I will be talking all week long about the guests that I have upcoming and what I'm watching. And then finally, you can get bonus episodes of my show by going to patreon.com/Kate Casey. I think I have like 86 episodes or something, bonus episodes. So do check that out, and I'm wishing you a great week, and I will check back with you on Friday.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk
He took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift.
She is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.